Welcome to the second hour's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
ECISD names new CFO, new Permian principal. OA News at OAOA.com. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees unanimously approved hiring a new principal for Permian High School and a new chief financial officer. Deleza Stiles was named the new PHS principal in a news release Wednesday morning, and Deborah Otmers was named CFO Tuesday night. The board approved personnel recommendations without naming who was recommended. Both come from Fredericksburg ISD. Stiles was the assistant superintendent of curriculum and instruction at Fredericksburg, where she launched and oversaw the district's remote learning platforms in response to COVID-19. She has 13 years of teaching experience in Lubbock ISD, Wichita Falls ISD, Hearst Ulysses Bedford ISD, and Graham ISD. She has been an elementary school principal, high school assistant principal, and high school principal. Stiles' high school campus was selected by the Texas Education Agency to be featured in a Texas Performance Standards Project profile, and she worked with local colleges to increase dual credit courses and career and technical education courses. She holds her superintendent certification, as well as certifications in special education and English as a second language. In the news release, Stiles called herself fortunate to have worked in the central office setting, but added the bulk of her administrative experience is at school. I realized I need to get back to the fever pitch of campus life and interacting daily with students and staff. For me, that's where it all happens. I am hardwired to be interacting where the rubber meets the road. Otmers was most recently the assistant superintendent for business and finance in Fredericksburg ISD. She also worked in the business division at Northeast ISD in San Antonio. She taught high school business classes for 6 years and worked 9 years in business and finance before entering education. She is a certified public accountant, a Texas School Business Officials TASBO instructor and curriculum writer, has a background in internal audit, a master's degree, and is a registered Texas school business administrator. I'm very excited for the opportunity to serve the Odessa community in this capacity, Otmers said in the release. This area of West Texas intrigues me with its unique landscape and supportive people. I am so happy to help financially shape the district and be part of the future of the ECISD students. Murray said he is glad to add Stiles and Otmers. We are excited to introduce Deborah and Deleza to our ECISD team, Murray said. Both bring a wealth of experience with them. Most importantly, experience as effective, successful leaders. Local Restaurants Work to Recover Loss of Business by Sam Waller, SWALLER at OAOA.com. Like most restaurants in Texas during the coronavirus shutdown, dining establishments in Odessa were left in less than advantageous circumstances. As the state progresses with its reopening plan, several downtown eateries are left to recover from the loss of business brought by the pandemic. I'm about ready to get back to normal, said Dwayne Cox, owner of the Permian Basin Hamburger Company, located at 520 North Grant Avenue, which was closed for the entire 42-day lockdown. I'm not going to accept this as the new normal. People in this part of the country are not going for that. Some establishments were able to maintain something resembling regular hours during the lockdown. Restaurants across the state were allowed to resume dine-in service on May 1st, but were limited to 25% capacity. restaurants will be able to open at 50% capacity on Friday. "We're okay," said Gracie Ortiz of Casa Ortiz, located at 503 North Allegheny Avenue. "We've been keeping our head above water." Others are still operating at less than what is allowed under the state's reopening guidelines. Rooster's Diner at 614 North Sam Houston Avenue still has not reopened its dining area, providing only curbside service in the third week of reopening. "It was a very slow start, but we just stayed with it," chef and owner Eric Prado said. "We had a plan, and that was curbside service. It's a day-by-day process." Cafe San Blas, located at 216 East 8th Street, had just begun establishing itself on the downtown scene after opening in December. "We had just started," co-owner Karen Carlin said. "We had 2.5, almost 3 months before this started. We were getting a good foundation, then this happened. We're definitely always trying to get the word out. We really haven't had much of a change yet. We've had a couple of people stop by, but it seems like there's still a lot of fear about this virus." And then there's El Sinaloense Mariscos and Bar, located at 512 North Grant Avenue, which had scheduled its grand opening for March 20th. Governor Greg Abbott issued a series of executive orders that included the suspension of dine-in service on March 19th. Over the next 6 weeks, restaurants had to make do with curbside, carry-out, and drive-through service. "We just closed for 6 weeks," Cox said. "We don't do that much carry-out, and we don't have a drive-up window, so we just closed and stayed home." Meanwhile, drive-through service was the lifeblood for Super Pollo's downtown location at 722 North Lee Avenue. "Business actually increased," co-owner A.D. Martinez said. "Drive-through was a good thing for us. It was crazy how downtown really supported us through this pandemic." Social media became a tool to help restaurants keep their brands in the public eye. El Sinaloense tried to increase its local presence by posting photographs of menu offerings to its Facebook page, www.facebook.com/ELSINALOENSETX, during the lockdown. Casa Ortiz created a website, www.casaortizrestaurant.com, through which customers could place orders. In a May 7th Facebook post, El Sinaloense said it is looking to expand its staff. "As we are getting ready to enter phase two of the governor's order, we are looking to bring some team members on board," the post said. "At this time, we are looking for kitchen help, along with a handful of wait staff and bartenders. All wait staff and bartenders must have appropriate licensing. We will be accepting applications as well as walk-in interviews at our location, 512 North Grant in Odessa." As the restart continues, other restaurants are slowly returning to full staffing. "The only tough part we had to go through was letting go of people, really good cooks that have been with us for a while," Super Pollo's Martinez said. "When they opened up at 25%, we brought them back." Casa Ortiz, which is owned by Maria Ortiz and operated by her daughters, Gracie, Patty, and Jessica, is looking to take advantage of the federal government's payroll protection program, but it's been slow going. "Right now, the 25%, we can only afford to pay one employee," Gracie Ortiz said. "Me and my other sister are actually working for free. It took about a month and a half before we got approved for the PPP program. We were able to get it, but we couldn't afford to pay everybody. We had to let go everybody. With everything starting to open back up, we were actually able to make a little bit of profit. probably by the beginning of the month, we're going to be able to bring the staff back. Well, Permian Basin Hamburger Company, which opened in 1978, and Casa Ortiz, which opened in 2004, are firmly established. Rooster's Diner is the next oldest downtown eatery, having opened in November 2017. We've been here 42 years, Cox said. I've actually got a couple of people who came in here the first day or two I opened still come in here. People that haven't been here for 20 years will come back through. Over the years, it's built up. We've got a pretty solid base. Also helping matters for Casa Ortiz, Gracie Ortiz said, is its location across the street from Medical Center Hospital. We were blessed that we had several sponsors, she said. Doctors actually sponsored for Medical Center for the Heroes, for emergency room, ICU, PCU, progressive care unit, and floors that had the patients that were sick with COVID-19. They sponsored about 100 plates, so we had a little bit of money coming in. Anybody who worked at Medical Center, once they walked in, they were not allowed out. They would call in and I would deliver to outside their door and they would pick it up. The key, Prado of Rooster's Diner said, is not trying to do too much too soon. We're just trying to play smart, he said. There's a budget and we're trying to stay in it. Hopefully it'll all come out. We've had to make so many different adjustments, personnel and everything. Everything is just kind of being minimal. When all of this lifts up, then we can open up our dining hall. Local news roundup. Police searching for woman involved in hit and run. The Odessa Police Department is looking for a woman who was reportedly involved in a hit and run with a fence near an apartment complex. The reported collision happened around 5 p.m. May 12th. At Sagebrush Apartments, located at 3250 West 8th Street, an OPD press release stated. Investigation reportedly showed a woman occupying a black Ford Expedition collided with a fence located at the Sagebrush Apartments. The woman fled the scene without meeting necessary legal requirements. OPD posted a photo of the woman that can be seen at tinyur.com/y9x63t89. Anyone with information about the incident is asked to contact hit and run investigator T. Yelly at 432-335-5758 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS, T-I-P-S, and reference case number 20-08527. Man charged with assaulting Uber driver. A 37-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly pointed a handgun at an Uber driver and rammed the Uber driver's car with his vehicle in North Odessa. Jason Luby was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. The reported assault happened May 6th in the 1300 block of East 52nd Street, an Ector County Sheriff's Office affidavit detailed. The Uber driver, who was identified as Jared George, reportedly told deputies that he went to pick up a fare in the listed address where he was confronted by the woman's boyfriend. The boyfriend was later identified as Luby. Luby threatened to pull George out of the vehicle and then punched the driver's side window and kicked the door of the Uber driver's vehicle, the affidavit stated. George left the area and took the woman to an unknown address on Alice Street. George reportedly detailed to deputies that Luby pulled up behind him in a white Yukon-type vehicle and was pointing a handgun at him. George stated he drove off and Luby drove after him, ramming his car twice. George dialed 911 to report the incident, giving direction of travel as he stated Luby was still chasing after him, the affidavit detailed. George stated he was able to lose Luby by cutting across the parking lot at Denny's, located on 42nd Street. During the investigation, an ECSO deputy reportedly located Luby at his residence in the 1300 block of East 52nd Street, as well as a 2008 white Chevrolet Suburban, which had front end damage and was missing the front license plate. Luby was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He had one bond totaling $20,000, and he posted bail on Saturday, jail records show. Teen charged with assaulting uncle. An Odessa Police Department affidavit detailed a teenager assaulted his uncle with a baseball bat, and the uncle shot the teenager in the leg with a handgun. Isaac Michael Bezerell, 19, was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon with serious bodily injury, a first-degree felony. The reported assault happened May 17th in the 1300 block of Clifford Street, an OPD affidavit stated. Rodolfo Urias is reportedly in charge of the household on the listed address, and his nephew, Bezerell, comes and goes and periodically sleeps there. Urias and Bezerell got into an argument and a fight because Urias didn't want Bezerell inside the house due to Bezerell using drugs. Bezerell assaulted Urias with a souvenir wooden baseball bat, the affidavit stated. During the assault, Urias grabbed a handgun, a Glock 40 caliber, and shot his nephew on the left leg. Urias reportedly had injuries to his face and head with possible fractures. Bezerell had a gunshot to his left leg. A witness stated she woke up due to the ruckus and saw Urias and Bezerell in a fight and blood over the residence, the affidavit stated. The witness didn't see or hear the gun being fired. A search warrant revealed a blood-stained Glock 40, blood-stained gun magazine with live rounds, a blood-stained and splintered wooden bat, and a fired round lodged in the kitchen floor. Bezerell was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He had one bond totaling $100,000, and he posted bail on Tuesday, jail records show. OA News at OAOA.com. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, May 21st, 2020. Opinion. Texas View. Paxton's actions hinder efforts to keep us safe. The Point. Politics should not guide how our elected representatives govern during a crisis. Amid the worst public health emergency in more than a century, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton is threatening to go after local officials who wish to keep us safer. You read that correctly. Given Texas' long reputation for its elected state officials who use their office to try to override the decisions of local governments, typically if they're led by Democrats, Paxton's actions smack of political maneuvering in a pivotal election year. More troubling, they hinder the efforts of well-meaning local officials to keep us all safe. On Tuesday, May 12th, the Republican Attorney General's office sent a letter to Austin and Travis County officials directing that they modify their stay-at-home orders to match looser statewide restrictions issued by Governor Greg Abbott. Paxton threatened legal action if they don't comply. The next day, Paxton asked the Texas Supreme Court to order election officials in Travis and four other Democratic-leaning counties to heed his legal interpretation that fear of contracting the coronavirus, reasonable considering it has claimed more than 85,000 American lives so far, is not a valid reason for voters to ask for mail-in ballots. In a separate case, in April, Travis County State District Judge Tim Schulach, responding to a lawsuit filed by the Texas Democratic Party, ordered voting by mail be available to anyone who requests a ballot. Paxton wanted the judge's order put on hold. Last Thursday, an appeals court ruled against him, but the legal fight is far from finished. In taking exception to Austin's stay-at-home rules, Paxton said they go too far because they require everyone over age 6 to wear a face covering when leaving their residence. Abbott's statewide order encourages use of masks, but doesn't mandate it. The letter from Paxton's office said the Austin-Travis County rules were unconstitutional and unlawful. We must point out that the local rules state there are no civil or criminal penalties for not wearing a mask. They merely seek to have everyone do what is safe and sensible and in line with health experts' recommendations to slow the spread of the coronavirus. We must also note the double standard at play. When a Dallas woman reopened her hair salon, violating the governor's emergency order and defying a court order, Republican officials rushed to her rescue, absolving her of responsibility for breaking the law. In trying to bar mail-in voting by people who claim they fear contracting the coronavirus at the polls, Paxton argues that state law narrowly defines who can receive a ballot by mail, and that fear of contracting a disease does not meet the criteria. In his petition to the state's highest civil court, Paxton said the legislature has determined that widespread mail-in balloting carries unacceptable risks of corruption and fraud. That's a refrain you hear often from Republican lawmakers in Texas, though a wide body of research does not back it up. An exhaustive investigative journalism analysis of all known voter fraud cases identified only 491 cases of absentee ballot fraud from 2000 to 2012, according to a new Brennan Center report. Billions of votes were cast during that period. In these grave times, and with important elections looming, people should not have to risk their health and their lives in order to vote. Rather than trying to squash efforts to expand voting by mail during the pandemic, officials should be working urgently to hold safe elections, including expanding voting alternatives. And local officials shouldn't be browbeaten for merely trying to ensure that their communities have a reasonable chance of staying healthy and avoiding a fast-spreading and deadly contagion, putting others at risk. Not when there are signs that what Austin is doing is working and when Texas is struggling to curb the pandemic. According to a Drexel University study, stay-at-home orders in Austin-Travis County have saved nearly 5,000 lives. Cases and deaths continue to climb statewide, however. Texas ignored benchmarks recommended by federal health officials as precursors to reopening businesses, including that states show a reduction in cases for at least 14 days. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, warned of grave consequences for states that reopen too soon. These states, he said, could see new outbreaks of COVID-19 that result in needless suffering and death. No one wants that, not Republicans, not Democrats. Political calculations should not guide how our elected representatives govern during a pandemic, especially not when they hinder our best efforts to keep us all safe. Austin, American Statesman. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, May 21st, 2020, obituaries. Adam Aiden Aldaz Hinojos, Odessa. Adam Aiden, A-D-A-N, Aldaz Hinojos, was born on October 17th, 1938, in Toya, Texas, and passed away on May 17th, 2020, in Odessa, Texas. Adam was married to his loving wife, Rosa L. Hinojos, for 58 years. He is preceded in death by mother and father, Leonora Hinojos and Angel Hinojos, wife Rosa L. Hinojos, brother Ricardo Hinojos, sister Isidra Franco, granddaughter Ashley Hinojos, sister Francisco Villabas, brother Benito Hinojos, sister Eloisa Arona. He is survived by sons, Larry Rodriguez, wife Shelley of Bakersfield, California, and David Hinojos, wife Paula Sanchez of Odessa, Texas, daughters Janet Hinojos of Odessa, Texas, Nancy Rangel of Odessa, Texas, and Sandra Hinojos of Odessa, Texas, brothers Alfredo Hinojos, wife Rosa G. of Odessa, Texas, sisters Elva Segovia of Kermit, Texas, and Elvita Villescas of San Antonio, Texas, as well as 18 grandchildren, 37 great-grandchildren, and one great-great-grandchild. A visitation will be held from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Thursday, May 21st, 2020, at Odessa Funeral Home. A funeral mass will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, May 22nd, 2020, at Holy Redeemer, with a graveside to follow at Ector County Cemetery. Fred Edward Vent, Kerrville. Fred Edward Vent, W-E-N-D-T, passed from this life May 18th, 2020, just 2 months shy of his 96th birthday. He was born in Las Cruces, New Mexico, July 15th, 1924. He is preceded in death by his parents, Ruth and Fred C. Vent, his brother Earl, his son Fred E. Vent, Jr. Fred is survived by his wife of 70 years, Doris, and his family, daughters Janie Love of San Antonio, Nancy Williams and Steve of Hammond, Louisiana, Pat Roberts and Jeff of Naples, Florida, 8 grandchildren, and 5 great-grandchildren. A family graveside service will be at Garden of Memories with Donna McGee of First United Methodist Church officiating. If desired, memorials may be made to Kerrville First United Methodist Church or a charity of choice. Condolences may be sent at www.grimesfuneralchapels.com by selecting the Send Condolences link. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Grimes Funeral Chapels of Kerrville. Vonabelle Grant Lawson, Odessa. Vonabelle Bo Grant Lawson of Odessa, Texas, passed away peacefully on Friday, May 15th, 2020. Funeral services will be held on Friday, May 22nd, 2020, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel, with Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. Sunset Memorial Funeral Home continues to practice social distancing, so for those unable to attend, the service will be live-streamed and viewable from her obituary page at www.sunsetodessa.com. She was born on February 6th, 1930, in Forson, Texas, to Alfred and Alta Grant. Vona is preceded in death by her parents, Alfred and Alta Grant, husband Chuck Lawson, and brother Curtis Grant. She continues to be loved by her brother, Harley Grant, and wife, Imogene Boots, of Meridian, Mississippi, daughter, Carol Vincent, and husband, Joe, of Odessa, son, Tom, and wife, Renee, of Poway, California, and son, Ray, and wife, Natalie, of Odessa. She also leaves 6 grandchildren and 10 wonderful great-grandchildren. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send family condolences, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death Notices. Ernesto Rodriguez Sr., Midland. Ernesto Rodriguez Sr., 82, of Midland, died Monday, May 18, 2020, in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m., May 23, 2020, at Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine in Midland, Texas. Burial will immediately follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Father David is officiating. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Juan Saucedo, Odessa. Juan Saucedo, S-A-U-C-E-D-O, 53, of Odessa, died Saturday, May 16, 2020, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Health and wellness. Low-cost, low-tech healthcare options often work best. Padmaja Patel, Midland Health. For more information, to learn about the programs offered at the Lifestyle Medicine Center, call 221-LIFE. When it comes to healthcare, we give importance to state-of-the-art new discoveries and expensive therapeutic options, and often overlook some of the old-fashioned, low-tech solutions that have proven their efficacy over the centuries. If the COVID-19 pandemic has taught us one thing, it is that these low-cost and low-tech options still work best. For example, hand-washing, social distancing, and wearing a mask in public. Not only that, some of the therapeutic options that we have been offering in hospitals for treatment, such as using convalescent plasma from those who have recovered from the infection, have been around since it was first used back in 1934 during the measles outbreak. It is not that we should ignore new research, which leads to high-tech, expensive treatments, but when it comes to improving public health outcomes, many simple low-tech solutions could offer relatively cheap and highly effective options. I admire those who have enormous wealth and are interested in investing in public health. Unfortunately, quite often their decisions are guided by the novelty of bringing solutions that depend on technology to diagnose and treat diseases, or finding personalized therapeutic solutions targeting individual genome to treat medical conditions. Dr. Dean Ornish, who is considered the father of lifestyle medicine, often states in his talks, "People often think that advances in medicine have to be a new drug, a new laser, or a surgical intervention to be powerful. Something really high-tech and expensive. They often have a hard time believing that the simple choices that we make in our lives every day, what we eat, how we respond to stress, whether or not we smoke, how much we exercise, and the quality of our relationships can make such a powerful difference in our health, our well-being, and our survival, but they often do." Dr. Ornish has directed clinical research for the last 40 years demonstrating that comprehensive lifestyle changes may begin to reverse even severe coronary heart disease without drugs or surgery, may stop or reverse the progression of early-stage prostate cancer, affects gene expression, turning on disease-preventing genes and turning off genes that promote cancer and heart disease, and that these lifestyle changes reverse aging by lengthening telomeres, the end of our chromosomes that control aging. The National Institutes of Health's signature national health project of recent years, the All of Us Research Program, has called for sequencing the genetic codes of more than 1 million Americans in the hope that personalized medicine will improve individual health outcomes. Congress has authorized a total of $1.5 billion over the 10 years for the program. Experts have expressed their skepticism about precision medicine and that it is a mistake to focus on the genome as the main driver of health. The most serious threats, they argue, come not from people's genes, but from their environment and behavior. The wider world in which a person is situated plays a primary role in determining health outcomes. Interestingly, according to the NIH report, the proportion of NIH-founded projects with the words public or population has dropped by 90% over the past 15 years, and for research areas including the words gene, genome, or genetic, is about 50% or more. In 2013, the National Research Council and the Institute of Medicine issued a bleak report on life expectancy and well-being in the United States. Shorter lives, poorer health documented that Americans were at a disadvantage at every step of the life cycle as compared with counterparts in peer countries. Even though there is a mountain of evidence that this low-cost, one-size-fits-all approach of lifestyle medicine can prevent and often reverse many chronic diseases, this message has not received traction in mainstream medical practices or public health policies. The main reason is that there is no profit in promoting these measures for big pharma or tech industries. In addition, at every level of government, healthcare decisions and policies are dictated by those who are not healthcare providers, while interest groups and lobbyists influence the ultimate outcome. At Midland Health, we remain committed in our mission to make Midland the healthiest community in Texas by offering lifestyle medicine programs. We are adding a new 15-day jumpstart program for people to take control of their health by adopting Healthy Nutrition Program. The American College of Lifestyle Medicine is celebrating Lifestyle Medicine Week, May 24 through 31. This week is a global celebration of healthy behaviors and a public awareness campaign focused on the impact of our choices can have on disease management. This week focuses on six essential lifestyle elements that optimize health: nutrition, exercise, sleep, stress, substance abuse, and social connection. To learn more about the six pillars of lifestyle medicine, join us in our Facebook Live broadcast each day at noon during Lifestyle Medicine Week. Dr. Padmaja Patel is director of the Lifestyle Medicine Center. Pandemic Challenges People's Overall Well-Being by Melanie Sais, Centers. Statistics let us know that 1 in 5 people will experience a mental illness during their lifetime. The term mental illness has long been regarded with notions of shame and discomfort. Professionals in the field have worked hard to reverse the negative perceptions and have made some very positive strides. While the stigma of mental health has begun to shift, it is certain that our overall awareness of it has never been more real than today. What better time to embrace our collective mental health than during a worldwide crisis? Mental health is defined by the World Health Organization as a state of well-being in which every individual realizes his or her own potential, can cope with the normal stresses of life, can work productively and fruitfully, and is able to make a contribution to her or his community. May is the designated month to celebrate mental health awareness, and frankly, we have never been more aware of our mental health. Normal stresses are now compounded by social distancing, health concerns, and economic uncertainty. Our overall well-being has never been more cooperatively challenged as it is today. Mark McQueen, Center's Clinical Director, urges us to embrace this important moment. To say we are experiencing unprecedented times is an understatement. While we can't control the source of our challenges or predict the outcomes, we can take a look around and realize that there is not one person who has been completely unscathed, he said. We can recognize that mental health is a part of every person's well-being, and it is okay to ask for help. Centers has continued to meet the mental health needs of our community, despite social distancing guidelines, through a teletherapy platform that allows for counseling and services by way of internet or telephone. Areas of support include, but are not limited to, abuse, neglect, addictions, ADD, ADHD, anger management, anxiety, behavior modifications, blended families, depression, divorce recovery, eating disorders, family conflict, grief, loss, internet disorders, marital discord, military support, personality disorders, play therapy, school problems, stress, substance abuse, suicide intervention, and trauma. Christy Edwards, Center's executive director, said, "Life does not come with a handbook, but it does come with many challenges. Centers is here to reassure our community that while we may not know what the future holds, we have the tools to help you cope with the present. May is a great time to take a moment to recognize that mental health is part of our human condition." In recognition of Mental Health Awareness Month, Centers has waived the initial visit assessment fee through the end of the month and offers affordable mental health care for all individuals, married couples, and families at a reduced rate based on need. In addition, Centers is offering two free sessions to all healthcare workers and first responders currently fighting COVID-19. We are proud to be able to continue to provide free service to members of the U.S. military and support services for immediate family members. We are currently welcoming new clients. We are here to help you during this challenging time. Contact us. To make an appointment at Centers, call 570-1084. For more information, visit www.centerstx.org. Sole finalist named for TTHSC President, from staff reports. The interim president of Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center has been named the sole finalist for the position, according to a press release from the university. Lori Rice Spearman, who joined TTUHSC in 1987, has served as interim president since November 1. She will become the first female president in Texas Tech University system history. The Texas Tech University System Board of Regents announced the selection on Thursday. The decision was unanimously approved at the conclusion of the board's regularly scheduled meeting. State law requires that 21 days must pass before final action can be taken on employment once a sole finalist has been named. Rice Spearman's start date as president is expected to be June 5, according to the release. A national search was conducted to recruit and identify a pool of experienced leaders for the position. The board voted to select Rice Spearman as the sole finalist after interviews were conducted with candidates and a recommendation was made by Dr. Ted L. Mitchell, Chancellor of the Texas Tech University System, former TTUHSC president. While serving as the provost and interim president, TTUHSC received reaffirmation of its accreditation from the Southern Association of Colleges and School Commission on Colleges. She has led the university's COVID-19 response, earning statewide and nationwide praise during the coronavirus outbreak. Also during her tenure, the School of Health Professions added several new areas of study for a total of 20 accredited academic programs. Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram. Permian Basin Opera launches virtual series. The Permian Basin Opera might not be on stage, but that isn't keeping singers from performing. The group has started a virtual series, The Lullaby Project. Starting Thursday night, America-based opera singers will sing their favorite lullaby, according to a press release. The series will be at 7 p.m. on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. The series is inspired by videos of celebrities and teachers reading stories virtually and a desire to bring opera into children's lives, as well as to provide some support to parents of small children, according to the release. The premiere episode features soprano Lindsay Ossi singing Second Star to the Right from the Disney animated film Peter Pan. She accompanies herself on a ukulele for this performance. Future episodes will feature baritone Craig Irvin, tenor Andrew Owens, and Grammy-nominated tenor Barry Banks. The project was fully underwritten by donors, and the company has offered a small stipend to all the performers to help alleviate problems caused by possible lost contracts because of the pandemic, according to the release. Viewers are suggested to follow Permian Basin Opera on Facebook and or Instagram ahead of the performance to receive notification of when the episodes are posted. J.C. Lewis. Parks Legado Farmers Market cancels 2020 season. The Parks Legado Farmers Market has been canceled for their 2020 season, according to a Facebook post. The post stated that because of the state guidelines regarding farmers markets, the Parks Legado team will not be able to deliver the full experience they have promised since the market's inception in June 2017. The 2020 Parks Legado Farmers Market is working to find new and creative ways to connect people with farmers and small businesses, according to the post. The market had been scheduled for 4 days between June and September.
Is Valsalazide dangerous? Dear Dr. Roach, my 9-year-old granddaughter has ulcerative colitis and takes Valsalazide, Colazal. It is listed as an anti-inflammatory and a derivative of 5-aminosalicylic acid, 5-ASA, which is a form of mesalamine. A friend in the medical field said this is an immunosuppressant, which would put my granddaughter in grave danger with a virus infection. Is this true? If so, wouldn't the GI doctor warn his patients? In addition, my granddaughter has not had a flu shot. NP. Answer. 5-ASA is an aspirin-like drug that is poorly absorbed and so exerts its action directly on the lining of the gut. Valsalazide is similar, although it was originally thought to act just as an anti-inflammatory. It is clear that the drug has several actions, including working as an immunosuppressant. Since it acts locally, the systemic immune system suppressant effect is lower than with some other drugs used for ulcerative colitis. In fact, a 2017 review found that serious infections are no greater in people with inflammatory bowel disease taking 5-ASA compared with taking placebo. The flu vaccine is indicated for adults and children with ulcerative colitis, with rare exceptions, such as those taking anti-B cell antibodies, such as rituximab. That is much more often given for cancer than for autoimmune disorders. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, May 21st, 2020, etc. Camera captures angry man's hour-long rant. Dear Abby, a few weeks ago, my husband and I had what I thought was a minor conflict from which I walked away to avoid escalation. I could hear him continuing to rant, so I pulled up the security camera on my phone and watched and listened as he continued to say horrible things for an hour or more. He called me a disgusting blob, said there is nothing appealing about me, and I should go out in the yard and kill myself just like my father did. The words were so painful that I began to sob uncontrollably and screamed in anguish. He never came to console me. In fact, he told me to shut up. I'm not a crier, typically, so his blatant disregard for the effect his words had on me raises another level of concern. We have since discussed the event, and his first defense was to say he didn't know I could hear him. Meanwhile, I have to live with the fact that I'm married to a man who has such a low opinion of me that he thinks I should kill myself. I have no family, and I'm hesitant to upend a life that is finally stable after a chaotic childhood and early adulthood. My husband isn't typically abusive, but this incident has me questioning everything. We have been together for 22 years and married for nearly 16 with no children. What are your thoughts? Thrown into turmoil. Dear Throne, my first thought is that you and your husband need to find a healthier way to deal with your conflicts than you're walking out on him and him saying nasty things into a camera, knowing full well he might be heard. If your definition of stability is tolerating further verbal abuse, then you are and will be paying a high price for it. I sincerely hope the two of you will try to iron out your differences with the help of a licensed marriage and family therapist. After all the years you have invested in each other, it's worth a shot. Dear Abby, my husband and I married 20 years ago. He never proposed. He just came home one day from boot camp and said, "We need to get married tomorrow so that I can get paid more." And we did. I regret that day. It wasn't what I wanted, and it meant nothing to me. Since then, so much has happened. He cheated on me while he was in the service and had PTSD to the point where he tried to kill himself, among other things. We are now in a happy place and have two awesome kids. I would like to redo our wedding day and for him to propose to me. The problem is he isn't ready. He said he hasn't done it because we have had more lows than highs. He said he will eventually when he feels the time is right. My feelings are hurt, and now I'm questioning why I am still here. I have stuck by his side for 20 years through thick and thin. I deserve that and much more. I'm not asking for anything over the top. Do you think I'm overreacting, or should I finally move on? Tired of waiting in Texas. Dear Tired, I don't think you are overreacting. I think you are over-orchestrating. You say you and your husband are in a happy place now after years of struggle. Plus, you have two awesome kids. Now is not the time to upset the apple cart. More important than redoing his proposal and your wedding day is devoting some time to working on communicating more effectively with each other. Dear Abby, Abigail Van Buren. Write Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
Jacqueline Begar Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Begar Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Gemini and a moon in Taurus. Happy birthday for Thursday, May 21st, 2020. Visionary and dauntless, you fight for what you believe in. The funds for your project come through at the last minute, and all you need to do is get better at accepting help. If single, your standards may be too high, so you must learn tolerance if you are to find a mate. If attached, allow yourself to be more vulnerable with your partner, and romantic bliss is your destiny. Leo wants to give to you more. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21st through April 19th, 3 stars. Your security is fluctuating. Family members or household members are affecting your cash flow. Seek additional income. High overhead means it is best not to overextend or gamble now. Pursue a position of leadership or rise to other new challenges. Tonight, return calls first. Taurus, April 20th through May 20th, 5 stars. Your charm and agreeable manner add to the general aura of good luck today. Invest in art, jewelry, or collectibles. Seek favors from those in authority. Romantic involvements bring a deep happiness. Tonight, you could be delighted by what you hear from friends. Gemini, May 21st through June 20th, 5 stars. Inner healing and a sense of peace will be generated today. Service to others and to the planet brings you a profound happiness. Visit or call an ill or elderly person, or clear away debris from a park or seaside. Tonight, spend time in meditation. Cancer, June 21st through July 22nd, 4 stars. It is a day to develop nurturing friendships. Your charm and popularity are emphasized. You are responsive to peer pressure, especially from those who are in pursuit of all kinds of pleasure. Enjoy yourself, but keep your goals and priorities in sight. Tonight, early bedtime. Leo, July 23rd through August 22nd, 4 stars. You are motivated and enthused about your work, but diplomacy and patience are a must to ensure success today. Separate family and personal issues from professional responsibilities. Tonight, you can only gain from being open and expressive with a child. Virgo, August 23rd through September 22nd, 5 stars. Today finds you applying spiritual teachings to daily life situations. You will be vital and creative. Your appearance even improves, lending strength to your self-esteem. This results in good fortune affecting your personal life as well as professional status. Tonight, you receive deep and loving acceptance. Libra, September 23rd through October 22nd, 4 stars. You display a flair for research and detective work. Today draws a mystery into the open. Your desires are directed toward making a special acquisition or establishing a relationship. Tonight, you always come through for others. Give yourself the gift of a night off. Scorpio, October 23rd through November 21st, 3 stars. Others are preoccupied and distracted. Be patient if you have to repeat questions or wait for phone calls to be returned. Your beloved is easier to understand. You successfully guide the course of your close relationship. Tonight, relate on a one-on-one basis. Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st, 3 stars. It is an ideal time to implement new habits. You feel an urge to be productive. Your job and projects bring deep satisfaction. Get organized with a schedule that enhances your well-being and productivity. Tonight, a loved one is only too delighted to join in. Capricorn, December 22nd through January 19th, 4 stars. There is rapport with those you care for most. Communicate your deepest desires and concerns, and you will be understood. You feel some divided loyalties among acquaintances. Remain impartial if there are conflicts and competitive feelings brewing. Tonight, tolerance carries you a long way. Aquarius, January 20th through February 18th, 3 stars. There is a new aura of love and contentment coming into your residence and family life. Be kind and tactful when conversing with loved ones. It is better to speak less and listen more. Tonight, organize a gathering with relatives by Zoom or FaceTime. Pisces, February 19th through March 20th, 5 stars. Today brings clarity and focus. You produce impressive writing and speak eloquently. Word skills are in top form. Enlist support and seek information. You develop more self-confidence and marvelous persuasive talent. Tonight, be careful what you wish for, as you very well might get it. Born today, reformer Elizabeth Fry, 1780. Musician Fats Waller, 1904. Director Nick Kavzavets, 1959.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or your favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.